Welcome to Hazard Class, the podcast created for and about you, the emergency responder.
Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Godin.
And I'm Mark Norman.
And I'm Jesse Taylor.
And this is Hazard Class, the show where, if you're not careful, you just might learn something.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Dave. So welcome, everyone. We got a great show today. Now, the first couple, we kind of talked about some general topics, but the topic of today is figures of merit. And Dave, these are really the sort of the metrics, the criteria we use when we're talking about the performance of meters and methods and things like that, right? Is that sort of a fair?
Right. That's absolutely correct. It's important to have a vocabulary or a common vocabulary when you're discussing technologies and equipment relative to one another.
Yeah. And I will say we're going to get technical, folks. So get out your pens and pencils for Hazard Class, right, JT? Because this is going to be what?
Yeah, this is going to be our nerdiest show yet. It'll be awesome.
First of all, offended and challenge accepted. But yeah, probably this might be the nerdiest one.
Having said that, we're going to talk about scientific terms, but how they relate to you as the responder for the meters you use in the field. So, you know, it's going to be technical, but it will have, some real purpose for what you do in the field. And with that, Dave, we talked before the show. I know you, we're all scientists. You are certainly one of the more, careful scientists of us. So you wanted to give a little disclaimer as far as what we're discussing and how it relates to what's in the literature, as it were. So I want you to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So all of the terms we're going to use have a lot of different meanings across a lot of different professions, and all of those professions all interact. So these words mean different things to a chemist, they mean different things to a statistician, and frankly, they mean different things to an operational responder. So we're going to take all of the terms. We're going to redefine them a little bit here, but we're always going to focus on just the simplicity of the conversation. There's no real need to get technical with these terms. And so we're going to use them in their most literal and obvious meanings, not necessarily their most scientific meaning.
Yeah. So we might be a tiny bit wrong, but in ways that are okay.
Yeah. That's what he's saying. Chemists, leave your Twitter hate for your chemist podcasts. Yeah. We're not listening to.
Yeah.
I assume there's a really robust, chemist Twitter feed that I'm just not a part of. Maybe JT is. It's probably very savage.
I got off Twitter a while back because it was brutal. But it's going to be a good show. You're going to learn a lot. Before we get into that, we do want to bring up the answer to the quiz question, the trivia question from the last show. And if you folks remember, JT, do you remember what the question was?
Oh, this was a great question about our logo and some really good trivia on mass spec.
Yeah. So the Iron Man, which is the 908 Devices logo, his little body sort of represents the trajectories of ions in a trap. And he's got a little head, right? And the question was, what's the significance of that head on the Iron Man? So, JT, you know the answer?
Yeah, where the head goes, the body goes.
That's part of it. But the number 0.908 represents a ratio in ion trap physics. And really, it comes down to, it kind of represents when an ion is stable in a trap. And the thing is, apparently, the company, 908 Devices, wanted to incorporate as 0.908 devices, and you can't do that.
Oh, no, no special figures like our passwords, only numbers and letters.
So incorporation law said can't have that. So they said, well, heck, we'll just call it 908 devices and put the dot, the decimal point on his head. So there you go. That's where it comes from.
So 0.908 is like the pi of mass spec.
Yeah. It's kind of like the pi of mass spec. It's a magic ratio. So that's the answer. Unfortunately, didn't have any winners. No one got it. So the oven mitts that we have are still in the prize closet. So
that's probably for the best, because I'm really not sure that oven mitts made out of a flammable material are a good market investment. But
the Gore-Tex. Yeah, we'll see.
I guess not, folks. You'll have to try again this week.
Yeah, we do have another one coming up. I do want to clarify. So when you answer the trivia question at the end of the show, we're going to take, if we get any, correct answers, all of them, and put them into a hat. And then so you have a chance at winning a prize. We got to avoid the steak knife incident where we had to send the 10 different winners an individual knife. So that's how we're going to do it. So the emails, we'll get to that at the end of the show.
You know, what was funny about that is that was during the episode where we cautioned people not to send dangerous things through the mail, wasn't it?
Well, fair enough.
I'm going to assume that those were really well packaged just for my own sense of cognitive dissonance.
That's not my job. That's marketing's job to send those out. But we're going to get into the show.
Knife in it.
Yeah. Get into the show. But of course, before we get started, we want to acknowledge all those brave men and women who keep us safe. Dave Godin, take it over.
No, absolutely. Special thanks to all of our soldiers, sailor, airmen, marines, everyone out there who's keeping us safe. Our first responders, be that police, law enforcement, emergency responders, hazardous material technicians, all of our state and local agencies, and all of our public health workers out there, just keeping the front line safe and, you know, doing the jobs that the rest of us didn't.
Everyone out there. So thank you for what you do. And thanks for listening. Hopefully you are and you're learning something. So with that, let's get into the show. We're going to start with this figures of merit discussion. First with some general topics, some very general terms, and then we'll get into some more specifics as they relate to meters. So I guess the first thing, Dave, to discuss is, what's the difference between quantitative, so a meter that's quantitative versus a meter that's qualitative?
Right. So generally a quantitative meter are things like our oxygen monitors, things like our dosimeters, and maybe some of our rad meters, but they're giving very specific numbers or rates.
Like a measurement.
Yeah, it's giving a direct measurement, and that measurement can, you know, changes as the environment changes, so it should be somewhat real time. But they're giving you numbers effectively to describe your environment. Whereas a qualitative is really just letting you know that something is there or not. And if possible, what is that material? Yeah. But oftentimes it's just an alert that something is different from the background that would normally be expected to be present.
Yeah. So really quantitative is how much. Qualitative is it there? And in some cases, if so, what is it? That's what we're talking about.
Yep. And some meters are both, but for the most part in our realm, like I said, minus the dosimeters and the oxygen monitors, we're really actually dealing with qualitative technology, even if it's identifying material, because it's really a binary, don't know what this is, or this is what it is.
All right. And then just kind of teasing some of the figures of merit, there's things like limit of quantitation, limit of detection, limit of identification. That's the stuff we'll get into. So that's sort of the quantitative versus qualitative. And again, we'll primarily focus on the qualitative. And then getting into that, so types of meters, there are detectors versus identifiers. And, you know, throughout my career, first of all, I learned early on that hazmat technicians call everything a meter.
But, okay. Yeah. Or a box, you know.
Infrared spectrometer is a meter. All right.
Or fair enough. Machine. We'll call it that.
But then sometimes it gets confused, detector versus identifier. So, Dave, kind of give the folks a quick, you know, how do we define those two different types of tools?
Right. A detector is typically non-specific, so it isn't necessarily concerned with telling you what that material is so much as telling you that something is there that requires your immediate attention as a responder. Usually a detector is set up to be able to detect very small amounts of things. And again, it's not necessarily trying to tell you what it is. It's just trying to let you know that that background has changed. It's usually a tool of health and safety. mm-hmm. you know, so that you as the responder know that you're walking into a dangerous environment. Because unfortunately, our dangerous environments are typically invisible, right?
Yeah.
There's not like the nefarious yellow smoke you might see in movies. It's a lot of our hazards are truly invisible to us. And without these meters, we wouldn't know the difference between a hot zone and a cold zone.
Yeah, and right. then the classic example is your CO detector, smoke detector mm-hmm. in your house, right? If it goes off, you say, oh, there must be CO here. And you hope that, you know, it's not a false positive or whatever. But yeah, it's just saying something is present versus, right, Dave, an identifier.
Right. So identifier is concerned with, hey, what is this change in background? Like what is actually present now that we've identified that there is something present? And so that can be something like an infrared spectrometer or a MON mm-hmm. or the MX908 where we're saying, hey, this material is fentanyl, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really good for you to know, as opposed to a detector where, you know, it's just letting you know that, hey, there's something here that's different and it requires your attention. And things yeah. can be both, right? Like an identifier mm-hmm. can also be a detector. A detector can sometimes be an identifier for certain things, mm-hmm. but not others.
Yeah. An example, if anyone used the Hazmat ID mm-hmm. from Smith's, and I think the Hazmat Elite still has it, there was the protein alert. Because right. we kind of discussed in one of the shows where infrared in the field can't identify proteins. So the Hazmat ID is an identifier. But if it detected these infrared signals that were consistent with a general protein, it would alert. So that's a detection versus like identifying, oh, this is anthrax or this is egg whites or this is whatever.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll talk about some of the figures of merit that define how well something detects versus identifies. And then one thing I just wanted to bring up very, very quickly is sort of the underpinning of all this for electronic meters in particular. So we're not talking pH paper. We're not talking colorimetric. We're talking something that is electronic. It's called the signal to noise ratio.
SNR,
absolutely. And really what it comes down to is the noise is that electronic signal that the meter is reading when the analyte of interest is not present. Now, this could be electronic noise. That's the most common, like white noise, just static. Think about it. Could be chemical noise, right? If you're in an environment with a vapor detector and there's some background of just yeah. stuff.
High vapor.
And there's lots of other kinds, but the bottom line is how strong is the signal from the analyte of interest above that sort of background that you don't care about? And that's basically the signal to noise. And that really kind of is an underpinning for these different figures of merit and how well a particular meter can perform in a given situation. One more quick thing before we go into the figures of merit. Again, real quick, I want to just mention this concept that we use in chemistry, particularly analytical chemistry, significant figures. We'll not get into the details here, but what it comes down to is when you make a measurement with a device, now that device could be, you know, electronic meter, it could be a measuring cup in your house, it could be, you know, a graduated cell, it doesn't matter. The significant figure is related to basically how precise that measurement can be. And then there's always another number there that's sort of the guess at sort of the last digit, as it were. Now, won't get into details, but bottom line is when we start talking about numbers that like vendors will, you know, claim, including us. Things like LODs, LOIs, all that. Is it significant based on their device? So there's a whole other, we could do a whole podcast on that.
Right.
But it's just something to keep in mind. You know, what's the difference between, is your detection limit, you know, 12.35 nanograms or is it 10 nanograms? Those are two very different numbers based on significant figures. So just a concept to throw out there, but I think it's important as we get into this discussion of these figures of merit. I will say that the trivia question for today is going to be based on significant figures, and it's a tough one.
Sig figs.
Significant figures, are we talking pop culture now or science?
Yeah, you'll see.
All right. I can't wait. Let's do it.
Before we get into that, I got to pay the bills, and I got some new ad copy from Alyssa.
Oh, yeah. Let's hear
Alyssa,
it.
Our program director. Here's what's happened when marketing sends you ad copy. They put in banter for you to read.
Oh, did they script our banter? Because that would be really helpful to me.
So here is the live read for this week's episode. You guys ready?
Go for it.
Hey, folks. Just a quick word here from our sponsor, which is us this week, parentheses, eye roll. Alyssa, this is an audio-only podcast, so the eye roll, they're not going to see it.
I mean, and the fact that we're an audio-only podcast is really for our viewers' protection. Like, no one wants to see us early in the morning.
Parentheses, insert funny banter about how Alyssa insists that we plug some of our own on-demand content, in parentheses. So, I guess we're going to do that. So here we go. This is the actual read. But in all seriousness, okay, so we do have some really great content for you on our website. Check out our online forums where thought leaders from industry, folks like Christina Baxter, Dave DeGregorio, you guys know him. He's great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Christina is too. A bunch of them.
If you haven't checked out any of her webcasts or podcasts, you would enjoy them. So, you know, go to our webpage and look them up, because she is a hoot.
She's fantastic. And if you ever get to be at like a conference, hopefully those start again sometime, you go to the bar after. Now, she'll be drinking Diet Coke, but she is just hilarious and just a ton of knowledge. Yeah, great person to talk to. Anyway, folks like them dish some straight talk on the fentanyl crisis, fourth generation agents, and more. We cover detection challenges, safety concerns, best practices, parentheses, what else? What else, Dave, JT, do we cover?
We solve murder coffee mysteries. Check out the MX Files in particular.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely check out the MX Files. That is a great little thing on our website. You'll learn some cool stuff from us. And then we field questions from not you guys, not Dave and JT, the listeners, your peers. To view these forums, hop on to the MX908 page at www.908devices.com. That's 908devices.com. And then here's the marketing thing. And if you want to get on our mailing list, of course you do. To receive invites to our live events, send an email to marketing@908devices.com, or just follow us on, guess where, guys? Twitter.
All right.
Twitter.
Not on the streets. That's very
appropriate. Follow us on Twitter. The handle is @908devices. I'm off Twitter. I'm done. Maybe I should get back on with a fake account so I can follow us, see what we're doing. And then it wraps up. Okay, how was that, Alyssa? Are you happy now? Okay, on with the show.
That was the least organic thing since I nearly failed organic chemistry the second time.
Yeah. All right, let's get into figures of merit.
Let's
do it. There's a few we're going to discuss. Dave, start us off with the first one, accuracy versus precision. Now, folks get these mixed up all the time, and even like first year like chemistry students get it mixed up. But what do we mean by accuracy versus precision?
Right. So accuracy is basically how correct or how close to the truly well-defined answer. Whereas precision is really how predictable and how consistent that device or technology gets the same answer. And now meters can be accurate and they can be precise. And sometimes it's actually helpful to have a meter that is precise but not accurate. A good example of this is your vapor detector, right? It's going to respond to a material, and sometimes it'll get it wrong, but you still know that something is present within the background, and you can know potential false positives, you can actually use those to your advantage. But in general, we'd prefer something that is both correct and consistent when it comes to meters, particularly our immediately dangerous to life and health meters, right? So the typical analogy that we use is like a bullseye target, right? So if you're out shooting or if you're you're throwing at darts, whatever it is that you do that involves a bullseye target, you're accurate if you're hitting that bullseye. Doesn't matter how often you hit it. If you hit it, that's, you know, 100% accuracy. If you get it a little off, that's a little less accurate, but you're still hitting that target. Precision is basically your shot group or how tightly clustered your shots are. So if you've ever seen me on the shooting range, you'll know that I'm neither accurate nor precise. But that is the typical analogy that we use to describe the difference between accuracy and precision. And frankly, in field meters, we really just mostly talk about accuracy.
We
field meters tend to be quite precise and predictable when we spot it to the same situation over and over. You should get the same answer.
We just want to know how good are they at giving us the right answer, and that is accuracy. And just real quick, in scientific terms, you can actually define accuracy in terms of what's called the absolute deviation. So it's a number you can calculate from a known measurement. Precision is more the relative deviation from the average of a collection of measurements. So we won't get into those details, but there are ways that scientists define these. But yeah, it comes down to you want something that's accurate and precise, and that's what you're looking for in a meter to give you confidence. So that's kind of accuracy versus precision. JT, anything to add there?
That sounds good, right? That was an accurate description, and I'm sure throughout the future of these podcasts, we will be precise about how those are defined.
Yes, we will. We may be consistently wrong. We may be consistently wrong, but we'll be precise. So that's accuracy, precision. Next one, very important. And people get hung up on this, so I really want to spend some time here. Sensitivity. So Dave, how do we define sensitivity in a meter?
So sensitivity is really defined by the limit of quantification, detection, and or identification. It's basically the smallest amount of stuff that the meter can detect and or identify, depending on that meter's purpose.
Yeah. And that goes back to the signal to noise. So, you know, the lower your noise, think about it. Like if you're in a quiet room, you can hear someone whispering, right? So the signal to noise is different versus if you're in a stadium, that person has to yell. So how much louder do they have to yell for you to hear it? So it's kind of that concept. And so, you know, meter manufacturers always want to optimize sort of the signal to noise, but it comes down to what's that lowest amount. You can either quantify, which we won't get into here. Again, we're talking more about qualitative detectors, or what's the lowest amount you can detect and or identify. So I'd like to bring up a couple of terms, Dave. So there's the LOD or limit of detection. And this is basically, as you said, that's the smallest or lowest amount that could be detected. Then there's the LOI or the limit of identification. And that's different. That's the smallest amount that can be accurately, as we said, reported as what this stuff is. So let's talk about LOD real quick. Now, when we're talking LOD, because people ask, you know, you go to a demo, what's the LOD of your meter? Well, depends.
Yeah, it depends on what you're measuring.
Depends on what you're measuring and what are you worried about. There are two categories of LOD. One is the absolute, right? So that's the very minimum quantity of a material, whether it's nanograms, milligrams, or if you're talking liquids, you know, microliters, whatever it is. That's an absolute number that you can express. Then, more importantly, I think to the field, for hazmat in particular, is the relative. That is, what's the lowest amount within something else, right? And that's usually on a percent level. So absolute is expressed in an absolute measurement, nanograms, milliliters, what have you. Relative is in percent. So why does this matter? We get this question all the time, right, Dave? Jesse, yeah, what's the limited detection of the MX908? Well, what do you want to know? So, you know, we'll say, fentanyl, it could be, 50 nanograms. For heroin, a couple hundred nanograms. That's absolute. But that's if you're depositing known quantities onto a swab. Who's doing that in a field?
Right.
This is always a difficult thing for hazmat because you can never even come close to predicting that matrix like you said. So you have that analytical minimum, but it's really about the effective minimum. So whenever I'm discussing limits of detection or identification, it's always about can you detect it below the immediately dangerous to life and health or the LD50 or whatever metric that's defined by our hazmat regulations, because those are the toxicologically relevant concentrations. You want to know if your meter can detect or identify it before it's going to kill you. That's certainly my interest point in a meter. I don't want to know after I dead, my detector will go off and be like, this man died of sarin. And you're like, well, thanks.
And that's a great point, right, JT, that when you're talking about LODs, well, what do you care about? How low do you need to detect, right?
What is your job, and can this meter help you accomplish that job safely or not?
So, something that's very, very sensitive is great, but if it's way too sensitive for your task, who cares? So we talk about, and we're talking about now LODs, LOIs. And people talk about relative to particularly synthetic opioids, drugs, and cutting agents. Well, your infrared and your Raman generally can't detect sort of below 10%. That's the number that's kind of thrown out there, right? So generally speaking, for a lot of materials, to be able to detect a peak within the infrared spectrum of that material, you need roughly about 10%. To see it. Now, does that mean you can identify it? That's different. So seeing a peak that sort of pokes above, the matrix spectrum is different than the algorithm on the device to be able to report to you, the user, oh, this is fentanyl or this is, sarin, whatever it is. So that's why I'm saying the LOD just means how low can you see the peak above sort of that background, if you will, that chemical noise. LOI is, how well can the device report to you that identity? And this relates, Dave, too, in the MX908. Again, we talk about this sort of 1% to 5% level, but, fentanyl can be cut with a lot of different things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The street drug, ecosystem is wild. It differs from region to region. It can differ from city to city and town to town. People are constantly changing what they mix drugs with and how that mixture is prepared. And so it's a really complex space of chemistry. I mean, there's an entire branch and profession of forensic chemists who dedicate their entire career to the analysis of controlled substances for this very reason.
Yeah. And so again, as a user, you're looking at meters and understanding them. You're asking, what's the LOD? Well, think about what does it mean? What's it mean relative to what you have to detect? What's the toxicity of that material? If you're talking about relative amounts, what's it mixed in? There's all kinds of stuff, but just understand there are these numbers that can go to that. Anyway, that's sensitivity. How low? Now, let's get into specificity, a word a lot of people have trouble saying, selectivity. And JT, I'd like you to talk about this, but here we're getting into, how well can your meter give the right answer? And you hear these terms, false positive rate, false negative rate. And we get the questions, as you guys know, what's your false positive rate? In my opinion, but JT, I'm going to have you discuss this. This is why folks like us won't just give you a number. We're always going to say, well, it depends. And then going back to significant figures, we'll give you sort of a rough number. But JT, why is that when it comes down to these false positive, false negative, all those kind of rates?
Oh, yeah. Determining that rate is actually a very specific procedure, and it does depend on how the measurements of the device were made, and are there different procedures? And generally, it's based on the rock curve analysis. That is the receiver operator characteristic curve.
Not to be confused with The Rock, yeah, starring Nicolas Cage and Sean Connery. Great movie, but yeah, ROC curve.
ROC.
Yeah, so go ahead, Jesse. It's a great point that people might have heard of, but I don't think they understand it.
No, we measure the ability of a detector to consistently return an accurate answer based on different configurations of the sample and of the measurement or sampling analysis procedure. And also, it gives you a good idea of, does the meter have some type of characteristic that actually needs interpretation? Like, mm-hmm. Will the experience of the user make a difference in how precise or accurate the meter is? Mm-hmm. And rock curves were developed in World War II to gauge, like, they had these volunteers who were reading radar signals, and they found that some of the folks could really accurately and very precisely interpret radar signals well, and others would see the same signals and not interpret them well. And so they figured that, so how can we determine how accurate the radar is, but also how precise the operator is in this? And
So, I mean, I think the takeaway is this is actually a really challenging thing to measure, specifically in the hazardous material and the first responder field, because no one can predict the crazy environments that we encounter in this field every single day.
Right.
It's impossible. And honestly, the responder can't predict it either, right? Like, it's different every day. That's one of the interesting parts of our particular job, is that we never know what we're walking into. And so it's difficult to challenge scientifically any of these meters to the extreme environments that we might encounter in the field. But certainly we as scientists, and particularly us as manufacturers, do our absolute best to encounter any of those potential false positives well before a user does.
Yeah, and it really comes down to the data set you used to determine that rock curve, mm-hmm. right, Jesse? And then there's always within that some threshold of response you set. And then generally what like a manufacturer will do is sort of dial in that threshold to say, okay, I'm willing. And a great example, Dave and Jesse, is the fentanyl classifier algorithm. Mm-hmm. Within the MX908. That was done in conjunction with a federal partner to alert if a fentanyl analog is present. And they used a fairly large data set of analogs that were in the library, not in the library. But they sort of dialed in and said, okay, we'll accept sort of a 70% true positive rate that will only give us like a 3% false positive rate. Now, mm-hmm. you could dial that curve and say, oh, we'll get 100% true positive rate, and we're probably going to get like a 90% false positive rate or something like that. So that's where you have to sort of be careful how you dial those algorithms and those thresholds in to say, okay, this is sort of the trade-offs and how we do that. And like you said, Dave, to me, it's this classic N+1 problem. It's like, yeah, we measured 500 things that aren't in the library. And during that measurement, our false positive rate was 1%. But what about this other thing we didn't measure? Yeah, it's an intractable problem, but we do our best. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is actually probably a good distinction between a detector and an identifier.
Yeah.
A detector is going to favor false positives over false negatives. And so it's going to err on the side of letting you know that a potential threat is present, even if it's not a very good fit. Because again, the whole job of a detector is to alert the responder to the potential risk. It's up to the responder to escalate or de-escalate that alert, or confirm or deny it. Whereas an identifier will typically err on the side of getting the answer correct Or incorrect, because that's its job, right? The identifier is trying to tell you what that is, and it's more important that that gets it right. Whereas a detector, again, is just, it doesn't matter if it gets it wrong, it's at least still letting you know that something has changed relative to background, and it's doing its job.
That is a great point, Dave, and ideally, you'd like to have both, right?
Yeah.
Something that can detect when needed and identify when needed. And we'll discuss more of those kind of concepts as we talk about other technologies in other shows. But just to wrap up this section, we talked about some of these analytical figures of merit: accuracy, precision, sensitivity, specificity, and these true positive rates, false positive rates. And again, some of the things to consider when you're looking at a meter and understanding what you need for your job. But what's just as important, Dave, among and or even beyond these sort of technical matters?
Right. And the important thing is that we specifically didn't use the laboratory or the chemistry version of these terms, because that's not what we do, right? This is hazard class. We are the field applications science team. And so we are doing science in the field in these uncertain conditions. And so for us and for responders, really one of the most important figures of merit when we're discussing technology is probably form function and ease of use, right? How well does this technology operate in the place that I am going to try to operate it? Because it's very different from a lab, for sure. Yeah. So we're often going to bring in form function and then ease of use when we're discussing the technology.
Yeah, because you could have a high performance laboratory, you know, GC or LC mass spec system that does has fantastic figures of merit, as we discussed. Ain't going to use it downrange. Probably not even in an analytical lab, maybe a smaller version, but that's kind of your point, is all these trade-offs and how they come into helping you do your job as listeners of Hazard Class. And I guess I would wrap up by saying, when it comes to, again, talking to manufacturers, not just us, anyone, they're talking numbers, especially a salesperson throwing out them. I'm going to use the famous quote, from the great President Ronald Reagan: trust, but verify, right?
Right.
And ask them, okay, well, how'd you come up with that number, and how many studies were done, and all that kind of stuff. It's just be smart about when you're thinking about these numbers. Make sense, guys?
Makes great sense.
Absolutely.
All right. We got to wrap up the show. So our trivia question for this week relates to significant figures. Dave, you're going to think this is a sports trivia question. It's not. So let's see.
Let's hear it.
I taught college classes early on a few years ago, and I asked my students this question right after it happened. So here's the question. Okay. We're talking about football, NFL. On September 12th, 2011, okay? So 2011. Okay. New England Patriots played the Miami Dolphins on Monday Night Football. It was like the season opener. Now, it was reported by ESPN and, you know, all the other networks. Tom Brady, the GOAT, as we all know, he threw for a record 517 yards in that game. That was his career high. I think it was a Monday Night Football record at the time, maybe still is, but 517, right? Here's the question. Was the statistic 517 yards, 517, reported to the correct number of significant figures? Again, based on a how things are measured, and I'll give you a hint. Think about how a football field is marked off. So you have to look into this one. But was it reported the correct number of significant figures? And more importantly, why? Why or why not? And so don't just email us and say yes or no. You got to give an answer. But if you think you know the answer, how do they get a hold of us, JT? Where do they send it?
They can contact us, send the answer to hazardclass at 908devices.com. That's 908devices.com.
Yep. Send it in. And if we get enough of them, you'll get your name in a hat. And
what's in the prize hopper?
Yeah, this week, Alyssa wanted to get something special. It's a 908 Devices yoga mat.
Ooh, I wish I was eligible to win that.
Alyssa is really into yoga.
No, it's good. You guys can work on your significant figures.
Yeah, exactly. Again,
very nice.
Contact us with the answer, just some comments, show ideas, anything you want. We're happy to hear. We thank you for listening. Guys, anything before we wrap up?
No, just this was, in fact, so far our dorkiest one yet. Don't worry. There's far more science that's probably been cut out before you hear it. And you can thank our production team for that.
That'd be Danny. Danny, our producer. He might just cut out some stuff. But yeah, it's been fun. Thank you, guys. And thank you, listeners, all those emergency responders. So tune in next time for another episode of Hazard Class, the show where, Jesse, what do we say?
If you're not careful, you just might learn something.
Well, that's it. Hazard Class dismissed.